from the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State and all over the world. WildMichiganRadio.com. Appreciate you joining us. And thanks to our friends at Conquest Sense in Michigan and Davison, Michigan. That's where I want to say. Right here in good old Mitten State. They are producing the best, in my personal opinion, and proven to me, some of the best cover scents and attractants in the industry with their VS1 and their Evercalm, and they are ATA approved. Do not buy a scent that is on a shelf that is not ATA approved and has a little checkmark sticker on it, especially with natural deer products. Conquest Scents has gone through all that. They are taken care of. And you can buy with confidence via online, conquestscents.com, or at your local retailer. And Not Just Guns in Mason on Cedar Street at 127, notjustguns.com. Wednesday nights is their big online auction. Great deals on firearms in-store as well as new and used firearms, accessories, ammunition, all kinds of great stuff at notjustguns.com. In Mason, Michigan. So let's talk this hour. The first hour, we talked with our good friends, Steve and Ivy Gruber. Also, we spoke with Brian Anderson, who is the Tick Terminator. And we talked a little bit about mushrooms with Steve and Ivy. But now we're going to go to Bill Parker, Michigan Outdoor News, the editor. Bill, how are you, sir?
I'm doing wonderful. Duran, how are you this morning?
Doing good, man. Let's get caught up on what's going on in the world of outdoor news around Michigan. And beyond. Here we are, summertime, so we're not really thinking a lot about deer hunting. Okay, we're just not. I mean, walleye is on the bite. We're going to talk with Lance Valentine as he's doing Saginaw Bay stuff right now. But, you know, the off-season stuff, you know, talking about the baiting ban and deer hunting coming up, because, again, not exactly a hot topic during the summertime.
Yeah, it usually isn't. But boy, right now it certainly is. You know, everybody's talking about it because the DNR is considering changes, and anytime there's change in regulation, you know, that hits a lot of people, you know, pretty square in the nose, and they want to know what's going on and why they're doing it and what's going to happen and what changes are going to be in place, you know, for the next season. So yeah, there has been a lot, and most of what's going on right now is going to take place in the Upper Peninsula. Most of the regulatory changes, there are a few things that they're looking at that would be, you know, statewide, but most of it is concerning the Upper Peninsula because of that one positive they found down in the southern tier county in Dickinson County last year, and it's raising a lot of concern. But the fact that they've only found one is also kind of complicating everything, because a lot of people are saying, hey, it was a one-shot deal. It probably wandered in from Wisconsin. We don't have it here in Michigan. We don't need to be taking all these drastic measures to eliminate it because it's not really here. So yeah, there's a lot of discussion going on and a lot of concerns, and a lot of people that hunt, you know, north of the bridge are very concerned with what kind of changes might be taking place. And the biggest one of them all is a baiting ban.
Now, you know, I know the population up there is very different than what we have here in the Lower Peninsula, especially in the southern LP. We were just up in the Sioux and parts around the Upper Peninsula last week. And, you know, it's funny because you'll see deer in daylight up there because they're so, you know, it's the population's lower. They're not used to seeing us. And, you know, when they see us, it's like, what are you? And we're looking at, what are you doing out? You know. But right. But here, you get, when you're coming home, you get to about, Clinton County on 127, and it's like littered. It's like people throw them out the window rather than people hitting them with cars.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just silly, the amount of deer carcasses, carcai, however you want to say it.
I think you had it right the first time.
Right. I like making stuff up as I go. They're on the sides of the roads. I'm just, I know we have population issues down here and an imbalance, a buck to doe ratio. Don't Don't worry, I'm not going to start a whole issue on that right now. But I mean, it's very different down here, and the concern obviously is greater. But up there, I can see where that concern is coming in as well.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head. It's like, it's, you know, the difference between night and day from our deer herd down here and the deer population up there, and the success that we all have, and you know, the dependence, I guess, if you will, for lack of a better term, that people in the Upper Peninsula have on bait. The DNR has you know, followed that and surveyed hunters and come up with some numbers on it, and they estimate that, like, statewide 52% of the deer hunters use bait, but in the Upper Peninsula it's 81%. So that's, you know, 8 out of 10 hunters in the Upper Peninsula use bait. And as far as success goes, 45% of the baiters are successful and 23% of the non-baiters are successful. So the big, you know, quandary that they have is that the DNR wants to continue to survey X number of deer from, you know, from the area, especially where they found this positive deer, to make sure that there's not any more there. And, you know, if they take baiting away from across the Upper Peninsula, are they going to get the number of deer not only in that area but in other areas surrounding that to continue their surveillance and to continue to, you know, to maintain the herd at manageable levels? So that's the big concern that they've had in the Upper Peninsula, and that's why they've kind of scaled down where they want to impose the ban to just a 10-mile radius, the townships within a 10-mile radius, I should say, of where they found that initial positive doe last fall.
Bill Parker,
as opposed to a state, you know, peninsula-wide ban.
Bill Parker from Michigan Outdoor News joining us here, talking a little bit about the bait ban, what's going on around the state, up in the UP, especially after the one doe was found. Bill, how far is that county from Wisconsin, the border up there?
It's Dickinson County borders Wisconsin,
okay.
And from my understanding, the deer was within, you know, a few miles of the Wisconsin border. It wasn't, you know, at the north side of the county, you know, 50, 60, 70 miles away. My understanding is that it was very close, and it certainly is not out of the realm of possibility that it did wander in from Wisconsin. So,
yeah,
you know, that's the big, you know, the big magical question, I guess, is where did this deer come from, and how prevalent is chronic wasting disease? Unfortunately, last year they tested almost over 1,700 deer. I think it was like 1,750 deer from that core area right around where they found that sick deer, and they didn't find any other positive deer. So that's very encouraging, and that, you know, leads people to believe that maybe it did just wander in from something. Apparently there's also a deer ranch not too far from the border there that has had some issues in the past. So when you put all that stuff together, mm-hmm. You know, guys that hunt up there are saying, oh, wait a minute, you know, what are we looking at here? We don't need to ban, you know, the way we hunt in all these other areas when we're not even sure that we have chronic wasting disease in the area that deer was found. So, you know, that's got a lot of people concerned, and they're worried that if they do ban it across the peninsula, that they just won't have the number of deer taken each year that
right.
They need to maintain that surveillance. Now, they are proposing a ban in the 10-mile radius of where that deer was found. In any township, they basically draw a circle around that spot, and any
right.
Township that falls within that 10-mile radius would be considered part of the core area. But the problem, again, up in the UP is that that's a little different, is that their townships don't end with a road. Sometimes a township ends in the middle of the forest.
Right.
So there's no way to know exactly where that township line is. So what they've done is they've moved those township borders into road borders.
Okay.
As opposed to the actual township, and that's what they're kind of using as a boundary for the chronic wasting disease core area and where they want to institute the baiting ban, just to make it, you know, so that people understand where these boundaries are.
All right, Bill Parker is joining us from Michigan Outdoor News. Whole another segment coming with Bill, and good stuff, man. You are on. This is why we call you, because you're on top of all this stuff. That's why I love Michigan Outdoor News as well. More coming your way, being brought to you by NotJustGuns.com here on the Michigan Talk Network.
make a living from walking in the woods. You can bet I'd be sitting pretty good, high on a hill, looking at a field downwind.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State. And Luke Bryan, what a cool dude. I'm just going to share this story here real quickly. We were down in, Indianapolis. It might have been in Louisville, Kentucky. Either way, we were standing waiting for an autograph session with Luke Bryan, with the guys from Duck Commander, with Jason Aldean, and a bunch of other people. And Luke Bryan's like standing right next to me, and I didn't really want to say anything. And all of a sudden, he looks at me. He's like, "Hey, man, selfie." I'm like, "Well, why not?" So that's my Luke Bryan story, and he is truly a great guy, an advocate for the outdoors, a hunter, an angler himself. And someday I would like to have him on this show, because these folks that, you know, like him, and we've met Blake Shelton on numerous occasions. He's a big outdoorsman as well. They're great ambassadors for what we do, and it just comes naturally to them. They just happen to be in a different industry, and that's how I got into this outdoor show business, is via the rock and roll industry as a disc jockey for a classic rock station here in Lansing. And here's an announcement, Bill, that I have not made public yet, and I'll do it on the show because, you know, they kind of go hand in hand. And in order to devote more time to Wild Michigan and to my other business, which is Michigan Pick and Flip, which is a buying and selling a lot of antique and vintage items, I'm going to be leaving middays at the Classic Rock Station here. I'm still going to do weekends, but I'll be focusing more on Wild Michigan and on the Michigan Pick and Flip side of business. So 25 years in the music end of radio.
Wow.
And I'm making the decision to give up the middays, keep the weekends, and focus more on this. So,
well, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Thanks.
That sounds great.
It's,
and I have
scary
to say that I don't know anybody else in all the people that I know who had Luke Bryan ask them to take a selfie with him.
Right.
How cool is that?
It was way cool, dude. And I'm like, you know, the second I got that picture, that went up on our Facebook page, and it blew up. It's like, I'm like, hey, he asked me. He recognized the skills.
He wanted a selfie with me.
He wanted a selfie with me, and that was it. But then the line started, like a mad rush to get pictures with Luke Bryan started, and the security guys were like, no. I'm like, he did it, not me. But
and
it was.
See, and you don't even have to worry about being blamed for that, because you didn't start it.
I didn't start it. Luke did. And that's one of the greatest, you know, cool stories of this business. We've been very privileged to be a part of the outdoors industry for a long time, part of the rock and classic rock industry. And you know, and I'm going on to something else that I've done for so long. But we're keeping Wild Michigan because I feel it's so important to bring guys like you on and all the other guests that we've been doing for almost 13 years now, to bring this information forward. And Bill, you're like in the middle of it every day, because this is your job as an editor for Michigan Outdoor News. You see so much stuff come across, and disseminating that information and deciding what makes it and what doesn't, that's got to be tough as an editor.
It is, because you're absolutely right. There's a lot of information out there, and you just kind of look at it as what's more important to how many of my readers, you know, that we have. Are the readers going to want to learn about this? Are they interested in this? And we try, you know, really hard to focus almost exclusively on hunting and fishing. You know, we're a hook and bullet publication. A lot of times I get comments from people or letters or calls that, you know, we should be covering this PFAS problem more, or we should be covering, you know, the oil pipeline in the Straits. And we do things like that a little bit just to kind of keep people informed that they're out there. But, boy, we could get so bogged down in environmental issues that we wouldn't even be a hook and bullet publication anymore. So we try to focus exclusively on, you know, specific to hunting and fishing. But when there are other issues like the two that I mentioned that certainly could have, you know, detrimental impacts on hunting and fishing, we obviously cover those too, but probably not to the extent that a full-fledged environmental publication would. But we definitely, you know, let people know what's going on out there so that they can be aware and at least, you know, make informed decisions if it's going to impact their outdoor recreation.
You know, and the paper that you guys have put out, you know, we've been big fans of that since the very beginning here. You have been a friend to this show and a contributor for a long time as well. And, you know, when I look at the calendar, when we started this in 2006, our biggest issue was Proposal 3 and the dove hunting issue. And now we're looking at the, you know, the possibility of the ribeye in the sky, Bill. We, for those who don't know, that is the sandhill crane. You can hunt them in other states. And again, why not Michigan? Why do we need to be so special that we don't? I mean, I'd like the opportunity.
Yeah, and they're getting to the point now that the numbers are there and they could sustain it. And the problem that we're running into is that they're having detrimental impact in agriculture community. When you get a flock of 20 or 30 cranes out in your freshly planted field and they start picking all your corn out of the ground before your corn comes up, that's a problem for the farmers, and then they can do a lot of damage. And then again, of course, after the plants come up and they start to grow as well. So the DNR has been issuing about 2,000, I think, we've taken in the last few years on nuisance permits through the agriculture community.
Mm-hmm.
But those can't be harvested for consumption. They have to be turned over, and I don't know what becomes of them, but it's pretty sad because it's a waste of a resource, number one.
Absolutely.
And if you need control and you need management measures like that, why not let hunters go out and take a few of them who are going to enjoy themselves and utilize that resource and bring it home? I've never had it, but I've heard other people, like you said, ribeye of the sky, that they're supposed to be very, very good eating. They're kind of new to Michigan, so a lot of people are very protective of them because mm-hmm. they haven't followed the line of geese quite yet where they become nuisances to people who live on the water and stuff.
Right.
But the farmers are having problems, and they are issuing nuisance crop damage permits. So that's kind of where the thinking is right now as well. Why not let the hunting community help the ag community and manage some of these birds that are in excess in certain areas? And it probably wouldn't even be a carte blanche statewide, hey, here's where take as many as you want. I'm sure if they did pass something, it would be very limited and very restricted and maybe even limited to certain regions where they're having these problems. It could be done along those lines to make it a positive for everybody.
You know, I've wanted to find a way to approach this topic because, again, they hunt them in other states and some of the southwestern states. And I've been intrigued by this name, Ribeye in the Sky. I want to know. I mean, I'm a ribeye. I love ribeye.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? If I can hunt one, then
right.
Why not? They sound like pterodactyls. If I knew what a pterodactyl sounded like, it would be a crane. I've got nothing against them. They're beautiful. They're cool. And so many people mistake them for deer in the summertime when they're out in the field.
Right. You see that big brown spot.
but you know, what do you do? I don't know. It's something to think about. Bill Parker, Michigan Outdoor News. I don't know where that segment just went. But it's
time
gone.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Absolutely. Find that paper on your shelves, on your stores, or just flat out subscribe. Best news in Michigan's outdoors industry. Thanks so much, Bill. We appreciate
you. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. More coming your way with Lance Valentine next on Wild Michigan.
I still believe.
Hey, Michiganiacs, this is your blood brother Ted Nugent celebrating the almighty Michigan spirit of the wild with my blood brother Duran Martinez on Wild Michigan. Go wild.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by Conquest Scents out of Davidson, Michigan. All kinds of new products. They got a mock scraper in there. They got some vaporizing scents. And don't forget the scents in the stick, the Evercalm, the VS1, and all of the other, the Running Buck, all the other great stuff that they have. They are simply the best scents on the market and ATA approved. Find them online, conquestscents.com. And we're going to talk a little bit of fishing right now, as we should on this show. The Saginaw Bay walleye bite is getting hot right now, and we had no reason to believe otherwise, and that's why we're going to check in with Lance Valentine. Teaching fishing is what he's doing, and you've been pardon the pun, Lance, schooling the old walleye this week.
Oh, you're giving me too much credit. It's actually pretty easy right now. So, yeah, you know, we've been we made that transition from Detroit to Saginaw. We've had a couple trips now, and starting to get a little dialed. And, you know, it's funny. It takes me two or three trips to kind of get on the water, kind of figure out what's going on, kind of get a feel for, you know, we're talking about, you know, water clarity and water color, and, you know, this year water level is a big deal. And it just takes 2 or 3 days to kind of get into, I tell guys all the time, it takes me 2 or 3 days every time I move to kind of get the water to kind of, it sounds kind of corny, but kind of get the water to kind of talk to you, right? And you know, it took 2 or 3 days in Detroit to kind of get dialed in and kind of know where the fish were. And it took us 2 or 3 trips on Saginaw, and now I feel pretty comfortable that if I make a decision in the morning and it's not a good decision, I feel very, very comfortable now that I understand kind of how the bay is operating, where the fish are, where they are in their yearly migration, which really doesn't change much every year, but the timing of it does based on, you know, several factors. But when you get 2 or 3 trips under your belt and you really start paying attention, again, you know, keeping good records, we talked about that, so I kind of the first couple trips specifically, I'll kind of keep track of what's going on and where we are and kind of compare that to years past and kind of get a feel. And now I feel like we're on our way and ready to just kind of take off running and have another great year up at Saginaw Bay.
You know, it's funny when you talk about it taking a few days. We talk about how unless everything was exactly the same every day, wind speed, air temperature, water temperature, light, everything was the same, it still wouldn't be the same for the fish because, look, we have days where sunrise is a minute sooner, sunset is a minute later. I mean, that angle of the light coming in, there's so much different going on every day. And then to add the fact that we have higher water levels than we've had in a very long time, you know, shrinking the beaches, oh, good gravy. But I mean, the water levels are coming up. That changes the dynamic of where the fish are going to be as well. That's pretty damn good, in my opinion, 3 days.
Yeah, right. But again, a lot of that is, a lot of that is having knowledge from years past and going back to that knowledge and understanding how this year is different than it used to be. You know, having a good foundation, a good base of what should be happening, and then plugging in the variables that are different this year and kind of telling how, you know, how the fish should act. And, you know, you bring up a good point about, you know, water level has been a huge thing. So now the question becomes, do you go back and fish waypoints? And you know I'm a waypoint junkie, right?
Sure.
So do you go back and fish waypoints that are now on Saginaw Bay sometimes 24 to 36 inches deeper, so 2 to 3 feet is a big deal. Do you go back and fish waypoints, or those waypoints that were in 11 feet of water that are now in 14, do you adjust and fish 11 feet of water because the 11 foot of water was the key in that location, or is it whatever is happening at that spot and the waypoints are telling you there's something there, bottom composition or whatever. So that is what takes the time is my fishing waypoints because that am I fishing this spot and these groups of waypoints because it's a good spot, hard bottom, soft bottom, weeds, whatever the case may be, or is this area good because I need to be in 11 feet and my waypoints aren't producing because they're 3 foot deeper. So having some time on the water without charters to actually kind of go through this process and kind of go, man, let's pull in here. The fish should be in here, man. We hit our waypoints. They weren't here. We're 3 feet higher. Let's go into 3 feet shallower. Boom, there's the fish. Now you know that in this area, it was the depth, not necessarily the spot. But a mile down the lake, it could change. The spot could have been the big deal as opposed to the depth. So having some time to just kind of do some spot checking, figure that out, and get a feel for what's going on every year kind of gets you in the mood and just kind of in the right mindset to kind of listen to what the lake's telling you every day. And be able to make those adjustments when your first guest doesn't work out right.
Lance Valentine is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Lance, here's the question. Structure on the bottom stays pretty much the same, even though the water depths change. Will they still tend to, hang out in those places of structure, even if the water level changes?
Well, there's more to it than that because now you have to look at if that bottom structure is bottom structure, wood, rocks, things that aren't going to move, I would tell you, yes, that structure is still being good. But water level really affects weed growth because light penetration affects how deep weeds grow because the light penetration only goes so deep. So now if your weed spots from last year are 3 feet deeper, is there going to be weed growth on it or is it now below the level of light penetration? Has the water color changed? And we've had a lot of runoff this year. The water is definitely dirtier. We're catching fish in water that I usually wouldn't fish color-wise it's brown, but it's still kind of clean brown. We're catching fish in brown water that I would just pass because there is so much brown water, it's hard to find that greener water like, that we usually like. So now you get a little bit of water clarity difference. So you got darker water. Your weed spot is now 3 feet deeper. The water's a little bit dirtier. There definitely isn't going to be light penetration that deep. Do those weeds you've been fishing for the last 5 years, do they grow? Or does that, again, does that shift fish 3 or 4 feet shallower because now the weed growth that used to be on this spot is now 3 feet shallower? So that's all stuff that, you know, you can use your sonar, you can use your side imaging, you can use all of that to kind of look and see, but nothing beats, like Babe Lincoln when you say, nothing beats BIB time, butt in the boat. You've got to get out there and try it and accept 2 or 3 days of maybe not catching fish, but understand that what you're doing is kind of leading you to an answer that's going to help you catch a lot more fish during the year. So, again, rocks, wood, thing, structure that isn't going to move is going to be good every year regardless of the depth. Weed growth is where you really got to pay attention to. Does a difference in water depth and or water clarity make a difference how deep the weeds fish, and do I need to make a shift if I'm trying to catch fish in the weeds?
Lance Valentine's our guest here on Wild Michigan. Lance, the below 57 line across the state of Michigan has been soaked this year. And I look at some of the northern portions and Saginaw Bay included, and I know there's been a lot of, you know, with ice and everything else that has brought those water levels up. But how has the rain been up around there? Because we down here have been soaked, and my in-laws up in Mount Pleasant. Oh, no, we've got a beautiful sunny day.
Yeah, no, you know, I was talking to one of the guys that owns Lemon Beach Marina yesterday after our trip, and, you know, it has rained there a lot of days. You know, they basically had the same April, May we had in Detroit River, which was, I literally was down there April 6th to May 20th, and I'd have to go back and look 100% to be sure, but I'm going to tell you, we had 2 days that over the course of my time on the water between, you know, 7 a.m. and 8 p.m. at night, you know, that we only had 2 days that whole time that we didn't get any rain. And they had that same type of April and May up at Linwood Beach. And talking with Sky, you know, we had a big northeast blow the other day that blew all the water into the marina, and, you know, docks are underwater. He says, the problem is, he goes, that's always happening. He goes, it's not leaving. He goes, we've got high water here in the marina on a southeast wind, which should be blowing water out of the marina. He goes, southeast or northwest wind. He goes, we still got water in the marina that's higher than it's ever been because none of this water is leaving. So that tells me that we're not necessarily getting a sage effect, that this water is here and it's going to stay through the summer. We need to figure out how that's going to affect the fish. So, yeah, they've gotten the rain. The water is definitely dirtier up there than I've ever seen it. Like I said, we're catching fish in water that I typically would not fish. But there's so many fish, and they don't have enough green water to go to, that this clear brown water is actually producing a lot. Actually, yesterday was our best, but as we got out of the brown water into the green water, fishing actually got worse. So having to kind of calculate all this in your head to make good decisions is tough. And again, you know, we've said this before. I've said this to you a lot. You know, we fish on Saginaw Bay, Lake Erie, Detroit River.
Sure.
Places where fishing is good, and you can do a lot of things wrong and still catch fish, but can you imagine all these conditions and having to figure out, we're going off to Houghton Lake this weekend for our 4-day fishing education weekend. Houghton Lake's going to be completely different than it was 2 years ago when we fished it.
Absolutely.
So
Lance Valentine.
Now we really got to adjust.
Well, adjustments is what you do. So hang on. We're going to talk more about that here on Wild Michigan.
To everyone that has served this great country, keeping us free to enjoy the great outdoors, thank you. From Duran Martinez and Team Wild Michigan.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone. Up and at 'em bright and early, I'm all business in my suit. Yeah, I'm dressed up for success, from my head down to my boots.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Being brought to you by Not Just Guns on Cedar Street in Mason at 127, notjustguns.com for their Wednesday night online auctions, man. A huge selection in-store of great handguns, shotguns, rifles. If you need suppressors, if you need some work done, the guys at Odin's Workshop are working with Not Guns, Not Just Guns. They do a great job as well. Get in there. See the good guys in the gun business at Not Just Guns and find them online, notjustguns.com. Now we're back with Lance Valentine, teaching fishing is what he's doing. Walleye fishing on the Big Bay, Saginaw Bay. And, again, you've adapted. We talked about adapting here a little bit ago in the last segment. And, you know, you've adapted to some new equipment, too, for the people that didn't know. You kind of changed up your setup for the Bay.
Yeah, I'm assuming you're talking about the pontoon.
I'm talking about the pontoon. I'm talking about the elephant in the room, which is the pontoon.
You know, and that's so funny. You know, 3 years ago, Brad Dupuy from AngerQuest Pontoons came to me and said, "Hey, we're looking for somebody. We're looking for, you know, and our you know our mutual friend Mike Avery has ran an AngerQuest pontoon for a couple of years, and before that, and Brad said, "Hey, I'm looking for a guy who's a serious fisherman to help promote this." So I went in and talked to Brad and kind of showed him what they were doing at AngerQuest. And I'm like, you know, this could work. And the first time I got in one, it took me an hour and I was completely convinced that it was going to be the best way to ever fish, was out on these pontoons. That was 3 years ago. So I'm into my third full charter season with an AngerQuest triple tune. And I'll tell you what, you know, the last two or three trips we've been out, we've had rough water. We've had some northeast wind, some east wind. And we've had, you know, solid 2 to 3 foot waves. Every one of my customers has said to a man, "I would not want to be out in this stuff in a regular boat." And the way the pontoon handles it, that triple tune, you know, basically three keels, so you're not getting blown all over. You're not getting affected by the wind as much when you fish. You can track straight. The ability that the pontoon sits on top of the water as opposed to plowing through it, it's much better driving in rough water. It's a lot drier in rough water. You can take on bigger waves with it than you can in a regular boat. It's a lot more comfortable. Oh, my goodness. A whole lot more comfortable than a regular boat. You know, myself, first mate, and six guys on the pontoon, and everybody's got room. Nobody's crowded. It's just been a fantastic fishing machine. The way it tracks in the wind, I've got a Lowrance outboard pilot on my Suzuki 200-horsepower outboard. I'm able to point that thing. Yesterday we were fishing in, you know, 1.5 to 2 foot waves. We were able to point that thing in directly into the wind, put the autopilot on, crank the speed up because we're trolling fast, 3-1, 3-2 yesterday. Able to crank the speed up, point the autopilot, push it, go to the back, and never worry about having to steer. You can't even do that in a regular boat with an autopilot because the way the wind and the waves affect the keel, because once it grabs that single keel in a regular boat, it moves it off course. With those three keels, my pontoons are almost 27 feet long. It's hard. It's like trying to turn a tricycle, right? Have a guy ride a motorcycle and see how easy you can turn, and then now take a three-wheeler and see how hard it is to turn that thing because you've got those three lines of movement. So now we've got three keels on the pontoon. Just an absolutely amazing fishing machine. I would tell anybody, if you're thinking about something to make your fishing easier, find a dealer, check out an AngerQuest pontoon. Just open your mind for an hour, take a ride, watch what it does. I think you'll really, really be surprised.
And I'm glad you said that too, because you've never been someone that has been stuck on something. You know, you have never been, this is the way it works, and this is how we do it. You know, when we talked, we went to have conversation about crawler harnesses one day. It's like, nope, don't use them anymore. You know, you have switched to hard baits and made that switch because you found that it was more effective. Or, you know, even through stages, through the 13 years that I've been dealing with you on this show, there's always been something new, something different that you've tried that you find out works better, or something to that effect, you know. And that's what I really, really admire about you and how you do things, because not only are you using it for yourself, but you're telling everybody about it as well.
Well, I know enough to know I don't know anything. And I know, especially fishing. Fishing is a puzzle every single day. And I know that I may have an answer. And we teach guys all the time in our seminars that there are a lot of right answers every day when you're fishing. There's a lot of right lures, a lot of right ways. There's only one best way to do it. There's only one best answer. A lot of guys never get to that because if they're catching fish on bottom bounces and crawlers, that's all they do. Well, there may be more and bigger fish you can catch faster and have a bigger basket 6 feet below the surface that want crankbaits going fast. Well, if all you're doing is fishing on the bottom all day, you have no idea if that's true. So we preach in our seminars and preach to our guys, you know, don't settle. Don't ever settle. Don't ever think that just because you're catching them this way that that's the best way today. Try something different. We encourage guys that once you start catching fish on something, don't immediately put all of that same something back in the water. Try the complete opposite and prove that what you're doing is either right or prove that there's actually a better way to do it. So many fishermen get caught up in, man, we just caught three fish 40 feet back on a Hottentot. There goes six Hottentots 40 feet back. Well, maybe a deep little ripper 80 feet back catches more and bigger fish. You don't know that until you try. So the beauty of my life of being able to be on the water a lot is I can take an hour, catch a bunch of fish, go, okay, we're going to go back to these fish completely different, completely change my setup, change my speed, change my lure type, change what I'm doing, spend a half hour, 45 minutes not catching anything, be okay with that and go, okay, what we were doing was the best, go back to doing it and start catching fish again. That's the beauty of being on the water. That's why I always get frustrated when I see guys post, a limit in 45 minutes today. Well, good. That means you had seven more hours of your day to try something different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why would you ever take a fish? You know, you and I have talked about this before. Why would you ever take a day that you have a chance to go fishing, be done in 45 minutes, and want to get back to the dock? You're on the water. Stay on the water. You've got a good bite. If you don't know how, maybe you caught them on crawlers, but you've got a good bite. You've got fish. You've got an area figured out. You don't know how to catch fish on spoons. You've got hot fish, put spoons down there. Now you're going to catch them on spoons. Now you're comfortable. So the beauty of what I do and what I was always taught was to never, ever settle. So we do try things, and our fishing does evolve. You know, 10 years ago, we were talking about running crawlers this time of year on the bottom at, 0.8, 0.9, 1, 1.2, and talking about blade type. I haven't ran a crawler harness in 11 years. I haven't touched a night crawler in 11 years because it's much more efficient the way that I fish and the way I need to get my fish to do something different. I've learned that by trying different things. That's what I've encouraged guys to do. Take something at the start of every year, say, hey, I'm not a good crankbait fisherman. Make that your goal for the year to become a good crankbait troller, and here's how you do that. When you go fishing, you only take crankbaits. If you have your favorite method on the boat, you're going to fall back to your crutch after an hour of not catching them on something else. Take what you need to learn how to do and only take that. Broaden your horizons. You'll be surprised how much a better fisherman you become in a couple of years because now you have all of these things that you can do. So when it is a spoon bite, you can catch them. When it is a lead core bite, you can catch them. When it is a crankbait bite, you can catch them. Being versatile and trying different things is one of the biggest things, becoming a good angler no matter where you go, no matter what time of year you fish, and no matter what conditions you're faced with.
Lance Valentine's our guest here on Wild Michigan. And, that's great information, too, because when we see, we talk about the Misery Loves Company on the Detroit River every year. And it's funny because there are boats that will raft up all together, and they're all jigging, and they're not catching anything. But so why are you still there? Move. Find deeper water.
I tell guys all the time, when I talk about fishing, I don't like to use the word always or never because the fish will definitely prove you wrong, right? There's no guarantees and there's no 100% things that are true in fishing except one, and that is this. This is one thing I know for 100% fact. Bad fishermen don't like to fish alone. They like to be around other bad fishermen, and that's usually why I end up with a pack on any body of water, because now there's nine guys not catching anything, but at least nobody else is catching anything either. And that happens a lot. Pick one, Detroit River, Lake Erie, Saginaw Bay, it doesn't matter. It happens all the time. There's guys around, not catching any fish. So if you take the time to learn all the techniques, right, if you take the time to learn how to be good, a little bit good at everything, now whatever that's the thing you got to understand is a lot of guys leave the dock with their, we've had this conversation 1,000 times. A lot of guys leave the dock with lures on their rods, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go bottom bouncer fishing. Well, what if the fish are 6 feet off the bottom? Bottom bouncers are useless when the fish are 6 feet off the bottom.
Right.
You don't know what's going to happen until you get out there and figure out where the fish are, how tightly they're grouped, how fast you need to go to cover the water, and where they are in the water column. Then you make a decision on what lures should work. You don't go the other way backwards, right? We call it the lures last. We have our 8 steps to catching fish, and the lure color is, and the the lure is the last part of it, the lure color being the last of the last,
mm-hmm.
but most guys concentrate on what's not important first. You've got to be where the fish are, understand how the fish are grouped, how fast you need to go to get them to trigger, what size, shape of bait they're feeding on. Then you pick the bait in your box that best imitates that, use that method, and go catch it.
All right, Lance Valentine, teachingfishing.com. Find him online. He's a link right on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Thanks to Conquest Sense. Also, notjustguns.com, Wednesday night auctions for those guys. We'll see y'all next week on the Michigan Talk Network.